Chapter 32, Camshafts and Valve Trains. Camshaft. Purpose and function. The major function of a camshaft is to open the valves. Camshafts have eccentric shapes called lobes that open the valve against the force of the valve springs. The valve spring closes the valve when the camshaft rotates off of the lobe. The camshaft lobe changes rotary motion, or camshaft, to linear motion, or valves. Cam shape or contour is the major factor in determining the operating characteristics of the engine. Operation: the camshaft is driven by timing gears, timing chains, and timing belts. The gear or sprocket on the camshaft has twice as many teeth, or notches, as the one on the crankshaft. This results in two crankshaft revolutions for each revolution of the camshaft. The camshaft turns at one-half the crankshaft speed in all four-stroke cycle engines. Cam lobe shape has more control over engine performance characteristics than any other single engine part. Engines identical in every way except cam lobe shape may have completely different operating characteristics and performance. See Figure 32.1. Refer to Figure 32.1. This high-performance camshaft has a lobe that opens the valve quickly and keeps it open for a long time. The camshaft may also operate the following: mechanical fuel pump for carburetor-equipped engines, oil pump, or distributor, if equipped, high-pressure fuel pump, or gasoline direct-injected engines. See Figure 32.2. Refer to Figure 32.2. The camshaft drives the distributor and the oil pump through a shaft from the end of the distributor. Refer to Figure 32.4, parts of a cam and camshaft terms, or nomenclature. Camshaft location: there are two basic areas where the camshaft can be located in an engine. In the engine block. This design is called the cam in block design. The camshaft is supported in the block by camshaft bearings and driven by the crankshaft with a gear or sprocket and chain drive. Engines with the cam located in the block are called pushrod or overhead valve, known as OHV engines. See Figure 32.3. Overhead. Overhead camshafts are either belt or chain driven from the crankshaft and are located in the cylinder heads. This arrangement is called overhead camshaft, known as OHC design. If there is a single overhead camshaft for each bank of cylinders, the engine is classified as a single overhead camshaft, also known as SOHC engine design. If an engine uses two overhead camshafts per bank of cylinders, this type of engine design is called a dual overhead camshaft, known as DOHC. Figure 32.3. The camshaft rides on bearings inside the engine block above the crankshaft on a typical cam and block engine. Camshaft design. Construction: the camshaft is usually a one-piece casting from chilled cast iron for many production engines that includes lobes, bearing journals, and accessory drive gear. See Figure 32.4. Other types of camshaft construction include forged steel, often used in diesel engines, steel machined from a solid billet, and composite camshafts, which use a lightweight tubular shaft with hardened steel lobes press-fitted over the shaft. The actual production of these camshafts involves placing the lobes over the tube shaft in the correct position. A steel ball is then drawn through the hollow steel tube, expanding the tube and securely locking the cam lobes in position. See Figure 32.5. Refer to Figure 32.5. A composite camshaft is lightweight and yet flexible, because the hollow tube can absorb twisting forces and the lobes are hard enough to withstand the forces involved in opening valves. Camshaft bearing journals. On pushrod engines, camshaft bearing journals must be larger than the cam lobe so that the camshaft can be installed in the engine through the cam bearings. Some overhead cam engines have bearing caps on the cam bearings. These cams can have large cam lobes with small bearing journals. Cam bearings on some engines are progressively smaller from the front journal to the rear. Other engines use the same size of camshaft bearing on all the journals. Hardness: older automotive camshafts were used with flat or convex face lifters and made from hardened alloy cast iron. It resists wear and provides the required strength. The very hardness of the camshaft causes it to be susceptible to chipping as the result of edge loading or careless handling. Cast iron camshafts have about the same hardness throughout. If reground, they should be recoated with a phosphate coating. Steel camshafts are usually constructed from SAE 4160 or 4180 steel and are usually induction hardened. Induction hardening involves heating the camshaft to cherry red in an electric field. Heating occurs by electrical induction. The heated camshaft is then dropped into oil. The rapid cooling hardens the surface. Camshafts can also be hardened by using the following methods: liquid nitriding, which hardens to 0.001 to 0.0015 of an inch thick, and gas nitriding, which hardens to 0.004 to 0.006 of an inch thick. Typical camshaft hardness should be 42 to 60 on the Rockwell C scale. Note, Rockwell is a type of hardness test, and the C represents the scale used. The higher the number, the harder the surface. The abbreviation RC60, therefore, indicates Rockwell hardness of 60 as measured on the C scale. If this outer hardness wears off, the lobes of the camshaft are easily worn until they are almost completely rounded. See Figure 32.6. Camshaft lubrication. Some engines transfer lubricating oil from the main oil gallery to the crankshaft around the camshaft journal or around the outside of the camshaft bearing. Cam bearing clearance is critical in these engines. If the clearance is too great, oil leaks out and the crankshaft bearings do not get enough oil. Other engines use drilled holes in the camshaft bearing journals to meter lubricating oil to the overhead rocker arm. Oil goes to the rocker arm each time the holes line up between the bearing oil gallery passage and the outlet passage to the rocker arm. Refer to Figure 32.6, worn camshaft with two lobes worn to the point of being almost round. Refer to Figure 32.7, the camshaft powers the high-pressure fuel pump on engines equipped with gasoline direct injection known as GDI. Fuel pump eccentrics, an eccentric cam lobe for the high-pressure fuel pump on engines equipped with gasoline direct injection, GDI. See Figure 32.7. Camshaft drives. Purpose and function. The crankshaft drives the camshaft with one of the following: timing gears, sprockets and chains, or sprockets and timing belts. Timing chains often have tensioners, or dampers, pressing on the unloaded side of the chain. The tensioner pad is a nylotron molding that is filled with molybdenum disulfide to give it low friction. The tensioner is held against the chain by either a spring or hydraulic oil pressure. See Figure 32.8. The gears or sprockets are key to their shafts so that they can be installed in only one position. The gears and sprockets are then indexed together by marks on the gear teeth or chain links. However, some engines use a tolerance ring that locks the drive sprocket to the camshaft, such as the Ford Modular V8. In these engines, the drive sprocket should not be removed from the camshaft unless the specified procedures are followed. When the crankshaft and camshaft timing marks are properly lined up, the cam lobes are indexed to the crankshaft throws of each cylinder so that the valves open and close correctly in relation to the piston position. Refer to Figure 32.8, a timing chain hydraulic tensioner. Refer to Figure 32.9, by making the camshaft gear twice as large as the crankshaft gear, the camshaft rotates one revolution for every two of the crankshaft. Camshaft chain drives. The crankshaft gear or sprocket that drives the camshaft is usually made of sintered iron. When gears are used on the camshaft, the teeth must be made from a soft material to help reduce noise. Usually, the whole gear is made of aluminum or fiber, especially in older engines. See Figure 32.9. When a chain and sprocket are used, the camshaft sprocket may be made of iron or it may have an aluminum hub with nylon teeth for noise reduction. Two types of timing chains are used. 1. The silent chain type, also known as a flat link type, or Morse type for its original manufacturer, operates quietly but tends to stretch with use. The metal links themselves do not stretch but, instead, the pin bushings at each joint wear, which causes the chain to become longer. See Figures 32.10 and 32.11. 2. The roller chain type is noisier, but operates with less friction and stretches less than the silent type of chain. If two chains are used side by side, this type of chain is called a double roller chain. See Figure 32.12. Note, when the timing chain stretches, the valve timing is retarded and the engine lacks low speed power. In some instances, the chain can wear through the timing chain cover and create an oil leak. Some 4-cam engines use a two-stage camshaft drive system. Primary, from crankshaft to camshaft. Secondary, from one camshaft to another. See Figure 32.13. Figure 32.10. A replacement silent chain and sprockets. The original camshaft sprocket was aluminum with nylon teeth to help control noise. This replacement set is not noticeably louder than the original and should give the owner many thousands of miles of useful service. Refer to Figure 32.11. The industry standard for when to replace a timing chain and gears is when a half of an inch, or 13 millimeters, or more of slack is measured in the chain. However, it is best to replace the timing chain and gear anytime the camshaft is replaced or the engine is disassembled for repair or overhaul. Camshaft belt drives. Many overhead camshaft engines use a timing belt rather than a chain. Cam drive belts are made from rubber and fabric and are often reinforced with fiberglass or Kevlar. The belt sprocket teeth are square cut or cogged. Drive belts and sprockets reduce weight compared to a chain drive and require no lubrication with reduced noise. However, the belt requires periodic replacement, usually every 60,000 miles, or 100,000 kilometers, or longer in some vehicles. See figures 3214 and 3215. Unless the engine is freewheeling, the piston can hit the valves if the belt breaks. A freewheeling engine is one that causes no internal damage if the camshaft drive belt breaks when the engine is running. An interference engine, however, causes some of the valves that are open to hit the pistons, causing major engine damage. See figures 3216 and 3217. Refer to figure 3212, a typical overhead camshaft engine showing the location of the tensioner, water pump, and chain guide as well as the timing marks. Refer to figure 3213. This dual overhead camshaft, DOHC, engine uses one chain from the crankshaft to the intake cam and a secondary chain to rotate the exhaust camshaft. Refer to figure 3214, a timing belt failed when the teeth were sheared off. This belt failed at 88,000 miles because the owner failed to replace it at the recommended interval of 60,000 miles. Refer to figure 3215, this timing belt broke because an oil leak from one of the camshaft seals caused oil to get into and weaken the belt. Most experts recommend replacing all engine seals in the front of the engine anytime a timing belt is replaced. If the timing belt travels over the water pump should also be replaced as a precaution. Refer to figure 3216. Many engines are of the interference design. If the timing belt, or chain, breaks, the piston still moves up and down in the cylinder, while the valves remain stationary. With a freewheeling design, nothing is damaged, but in an interference engine, the valves are often bent. Refer to figure 3217, a head from a Mercedes showing bent valves when the timing chain stretched and skipped over the crankshaft sprocket. When this happened, the piston kept moving and bent the valves. Camshaft movement. Reasons camshafts move. Cam chucking is the movement of the camshaft lengthwise in the engine during operation. Each camshaft must have some means to control the shaft and thrust. One method is to use a thrust plate between the camshaft drive gear or sprocket and a flange on the camshaft. A thrust plate is attached to the engine block with cap screws. In a few camshafts, a button, spring, or retainer that contacts the timing cover limits forward motion of the camshaft. Why flat bottom lifters rotate? Valve trains that use flat bottom lifters use a spherical, curved, lifter face that slides against the cam lobe. This produces a surface on the lifter face that is slightly convex, by about 0.002 of an inch. The lifter also contacts the lobe at a point that is slightly off-center. This produces a small turning force on the lifter to cause some lifter rotation for even wear. In operation, there is a wide line of contact between the lifter and the high point of the cam lobe. See figure 3218. These are the highest loads that are produced in an engine. This surface is the most critical lubrication point in an engine. Camshaft lobe lift. The lobe lift of the cam is usually expressed in decimal inches and represents the distance that the valve lifter or follower is moved. The amount that the valve is lifted is determined by the lobe lift times the ratio of the rocker arm. See figures 3219 and 3220. The higher the lift of the camshaft lobe, the greater the amount of air and fuel that can enter the engine. The more air and fuel burned in an engine, the greater the power potential of the engine. The amount of lift of a camshaft is often different for the intake and exhaust valves. If the specifications vary, the camshaft is called asymmetrical. If the lift is the same, the cam is called symmetrical. Refer to figure 3218. The slight angle on the curve on the bottom of a flat bottom lifter cause the lifter and the pushrod to rotate during normal operation. Refer to figure 3219. The lobe lift is the amount the cam lobe lifts the lifter. The blue circle is called the base circle. Because the rocker arm adds to this amount, the entire valve train has to be considered when selecting a camshaft that has the desired lift and duration. Refer to figure 3220. The ramps on the cam lobe allow the valves to be opened and closed quickly, yet under control, to avoid damaging valve train components, especially at high engine speeds. Tech tip. Best to warn the customer. A technician replaced a timing chain and gears on a high-mileage Chevrolet V8. The repair was accomplished correctly, yet after starting, the engine burned an excessive amount of oil. Before the timing chain replacement, oil consumption was minimal. The replacement timing chain restored proper operation of the engine by restoring the proper cam and valve timing, which increased engine vacuum. Increased vacuum can draw oil from the crankcase past worn piston rings and through worn valve guides during the intake stroke. Similar increased oil consumption problems occur if a valve job is performed on a high-mileage engine with worn piston rings and/or cylinders. To satisfy the owner of the vehicle, the technician had to disassemble and refinish the cylinders and replace the piston rings. Therefore, all technicians should warn customers that increased oil usage might result from almost any engine repair to a high-mileage engine. However, when the amount of lift increases, so do the forces on the camshaft and the rest of the valve train. Generally, a camshaft with a lift of over 0.5 of an inch, or 1.3 centimeters, is unsuitable for street operation, except for use in engines that are over 400 inch 3, or 6 liters. The lift specifications at the valve face assume the use of the stock rocker arm ratio. If non-stock rocker arms with a higher ratio are installed, for example, 1.6 to 1 rockers replacing the stock 1.5 to 1 rocker arms, the lift at the valve is increased. Also, because the rocker arm rotation covers a greater distance at the pivot of the rocker arm can hit the edge of the valve retainer. Rocker arms. Purpose and function: a rocker arm reverses the upward movement of the pushrod to produce a downward movement on the tip of the valve. Engine designers make good use of the rocker arm. It is designed to reduce the travel of the cam follower or lifter and pushrod while maintaining the required valve lift. This is done by using a rocker arm ratio usually of 1.5 to 1. For a given amount of lift on the pushrod, the valve opens to 1.5 times the cam lobe lift. This ratio allows the camshaft to be smaller, so the engine can be smaller. See Figure 32.21. Caution: using rocker arms with a higher ratio than stock can also cause the valve spring to compress too much and actually bind. Valve spring bind, or coil bind, occurs when the valve spring is compressed to the point where there is no clearance in the spring. It is completely compressed when coil bind occurs in a running engine. Bent pushrods, broken rocker arms, or other valve train damage can result. See Figure 32.22. Rocker arms may be cast, forged, or stamped steel. Refer to Figure 32.21. A 1.5 to 1 ratio rocker arm means that dimension A is 1.5 times the length of dimension B. Therefore, if the pushrod is moved up 0.4 inch by the camshaft lobe, the valve is pushed down, opened, 0.4 of an inch times 1.5, or 0.6 of an inch. Refer to Figure 32.22, a high-performance aluminum roller rocker arm. Both the pivot and the tip that contacts the stem of the valve are equipped with rollers to help reduce friction for more power and better fuel economy. Forged rocker arms are the strongest, but they require expensive manufacturing operations. Rocker arms may have bushings or bearings installed to reduce friction and increase durability. Cast rocker arms cost less to make and do not usually use bushings, but they do require several machining operations. They are not as strong as forged rocker arms, but are satisfactory for passenger vehicle service. Stamped steel rocker arms are lightweight and cost-effective. Shaft-mounted rocker arms on some overhead valve. In most single overhead camshaft engines, the rocker arms are mounted on a shaft that runs the full length of the cylinder head. See Figure 32.23. Because the shaft provides a strong and stable platform for the rocker arms, shaft-mounted rocker arms work well, especially at high engine speeds. While most overhead camshaft engines that use rocker arm shafts do use an adjustable rocker arm, most OHV engines using rocker arm shafts have no provision for adjustment. Shaft-mounted rocker arms are lubricated through oil passages that travel from the block through the head and into the shaft, and then to the rocker arms. Refer to Figure 32.23. Some engines today use rocker shafts to support rocker arms, such as the V6 engine with a single overhead camshaft located in the center of the cylinder head. Frequently asked question: are the valves adjustable? If the stud has the same diameter for its whole length, the rockers are adjustable and the nut is the interference type, or lock type nut. If the stud has a shoulder of a different diameter, the rockers are non-adjustable and the nut does not have interference threads. Tech tip: rocker arm shafts can cause sticking valves. As oil oxidizes, it forms a varnish. Varnish buildup is particularly common on hot upper portions of the engine, such as rocker arm shafts. The varnish restricts clean oil from getting into and lubricating the rocker arms. The cam lobe can easily force the valves open, but the valve springs often do not exert enough force to fully close the valves. The result is an engine miss, which may be intermittent. Worn valve guides and/or weak valve springs can also cause occasional rough idle, uneven running, or an engine misfire. Stud-mounted rocker arms. Stud-mounted rockers are only found on OHV engines, and each rocker arm is attached to a stud that is pressed or threaded into the cylinder head. A ball on top of the rocker arm provides the bearing surface as the rocker arm pivots and is held in place and adjusted for valve clearance by a nut. While this design looks less stable than a shaft-mounted rocker, this design has proved to be reliable and is inexpensive to manufacture. The rocker arms receive lubricating oil under pressure through hollow pushrods. See Figure 3224. Some engines use pushrod guide plates fastened to the head. See Figure 3225. Pedestal-mounted rocker arms. Pedestal-mounted rocker arms are similar to stud-mounted rocker arms, but do not use a stud and are used only in OHV engines. Two rocker arms are attached to and pivot on a pedestal attached to the cylinder head with one or two bolts. The pedestal is usually made from aluminum and the rocker arms are usually stamped steel, which is lightweight and non-adjustable. See Figure 3226. Refer to Figure 3224, a typical stud-mounted rocker arm. Refer to Figure 3225, pushrod guide plates are bolted to the head and help stabilize the valve train, especially at high engine speeds. Refer to Figure 3226, a pedestal-type rocker arm design that uses one bolt for each rocker arm and is non-adjustable. If valve lash needs to be adjusted, different length pushrods must be used. Refer to Figure 3227. Overhead valve engines are also known as pushrod engines because of the long pushrod that extends from the lifter to the rocker arm. Refer to Figure 3228. When the timing chain broke, the valve stopped moving up and down, but the pistons kept moving and hit the valves, causing the pushrods to bend. Purpose and function: pushrods transfer the lifting motion of the valve train from the cam lobe and lifters to the rocker arms. See Figure 3227. Types of pushrods. Pushrods are designed to be as light as possible and still maintain their strength. They may be either solid or hollow. If they are to be used as passages for oil to lubricate rocker arms, they must be hollow. Pushrods use a convex ball on the lower end that seats in the lifter. The rocker arm end is also a convex ball, unless there is an adjustment screw in the pushrod end of the rocker arm. In this case, the rocker arm end of the pushrod has a concave socket. It mates with the convex ball on the adjustment screw in the rocker arm. All pushrods should be rolled on a flat surface to check for straightness. See Figure 3228. Refer to Figure 3229. Hardened pushrods should be used in any engine that uses pushrod guides, plates. To determine if the pushrod is hardened, simply try to scratch the side of the pushrod with a pocket knife. Tech tip: the scratch test. All pushrods used with guide plates must be hardened on the sides and on the tips. To easily determine if a pushrod is hardened, simply use a sharp pocket knife to scrape the wall of the pushrod. A heat-treated pushrod does not scratch. See Figure 3229. The tolerance in the valve train allows for some machining of engine parts without the need to change pushrod length. However, if one or more of the following changes have been made to an engine, a different pushrod length may be necessary. The block deck height machined. The cylinder head deck height machined. The camshaft base circle size reduced. The valve length increased, or the lifter design changed. Hollow pushrod dirt. Many engine rebuilders and remanufacturers do not reuse old hollow pushrods. Dirt, carbon, and other debris are difficult to thoroughly clean from inside a hollow pushrod. When an engine is run with used pushrods, the trapped particles can be dislodged and ruin new bearings and other new engine parts. Therefore, for best results, consider purchasing new hollow pushrods instead of trying to clean and reuse the originals. Refer to Figure 3230. Older engines used flat-bottom lifters, whereas all engines since the 1990s use roller lifters. Refer to Figure 3231. All roller lifters must use some method to keep the lifter straight and not rotating. Lifters or tappets. Purpose and function: valve lifters or tappets follow the contour or shape of the camshaft lobe. This arrangement changes the rotary cam motion to a reciprocating motion in the valve train. Older style lifters have a relatively flat surface that slides on the cam. Most lifters, however, are designed with a roller to follow the cam contour. Roller lifters are used primarily in production engines to reduce valve train friction by up to 8%. This friction reduction can increase fuel economy and help to offset the greater manufacturing cost. See Figure 3230. All roller lifters must use a retainer or a guide plate to prevent lifter rotation. The retainer ensures that the roller is kept in line with the cam. See figure 32-31. Valve lash, valve train clearance is also called valve lash, which is needed to help compensate for thermal expansion and wear. Valve train clearance must not be excessive, for it causes noise or results in premature failure. Two methods are commonly used to make the necessary valve clearance adjustments. One involves a solid valve lifter, which can be adjusted mechanically at the rocker arm or by changing shims on certain overhead camshaft engines. The other involves a lifter with an automatic hydraulic adjustment built into the lifter body, called a hydraulic valve lifter. Refer to figure 32-32, a cutaway of a flat-bottom solid lifter. Because this type of lifter contains a retaining ring and oil holes, it is sometimes confused with a hydraulic lifter that also contains additional parts. The holes in this lifter are designed to supply oil to the rocker arms through a hollow pushrod. Solid lifters, overhead valve engines with mechanical lifters have an adjustment screw at the pushrod end of the rocker arm or an adjustment nut at the ball pivot. Adjustable pushrods are available for specific applications. Valve trains using solid lifters must run with some clearance to ensure positive valve closure, regardless of the engine temperature. This clearance is matched by a gradual rise in the cam contour, called a ramp. Hydraulic lifter camshafts do not have this ramp. The ramp takes up the clearance before the valve begins to open. The camshaft lobe also has a closing ramp to ensure quiet operation. A lifter is solid in the sense that it transfers motion directly from the cam to the pushrod or valve. Its physical construction is that of a lightweight cylinder, either hollow or with a small diameter center section and full diameter ends. In some types that transfer oil through the pushrod, the external appearance is the same as for hydraulic lifters. See figure 32-32. Hydraulic lifters. A hydraulic lifter consists primarily of a hollow cylinder body enclosing a closely fit hollow plunger, a check valve, and a pushrod cup. Lifters that feed oil up through the pushrod have a metering disc or restrictor valve located under the pushrod cup. Engine oil under pressure is fed through an engine passage to the exterior lifter body. An undercut portion allows the oil under pressure to surround the lifter body. Oil under pressure goes through holes in the undercut section into the center of the plunger. From there, it goes down through the check valve to a clearance space between the bottom of the plunger and the interior bottom of the lifter body. It fills this space with oil at engine pressure. Slight leakage allowance is designed into the lifter so that the air can bleed out and the lifter can leak down if it should become overfilled. The pushrod fits into a cup in the top, open end of the lifter plunger. Holes in the pushrod cup, pushrod end, and hollow pushrod allow oil to transfer from the lifter piston center, past a metering disc or restrictor valve, and up through the pushrod to the rocker arm. Oil leaving the rocker arm lubricates the rocker arm assembly. As the cam starts to push the lifter against the valve train, the oil below the lifter plunger is squeezed and tries to return to the lifter plunger center. A lifter check valve, either ball or disc type, traps the oil below the lifter plunger. This hydraulically locks the operating length of the lifter. The hydraulic lifter then opens the engine valve as what a solid lifter. When the lifter returns to the base circle of the cam, engine oil pressure again works to replace any oil that may have leaked out of the lifter. See figure 32-33. The job of the hydraulic lifter is to take up all clearance in the valve train. Occasionally, engines are run at excessive speeds. This tends to throw the valve open, causing valve float. During valve float, clearance exists in the valve train. The hydraulic lifter takes up this clearance as it is designed to do. When this occurs, it keeps the valve from closing on the seat, a process called pump up. Pump up does not occur when the engine is operated in the speed range for which it is designed. Refer to figure 32-33, an exploded view of a hydraulic roller lifter. Overhead camshaft valve trains. Terminology: overhead camshaft engines use several different types of valve opening designs. 1. One type opens the valves directly with a bucket. See figure 32-34. 2. The second type uses a cam follower, also called a finger follower, that provides an opening ratio similar to that of a rocker arm. Finger followers open the valves by approximately 1.5 times the cam lift. The pivot point of the finger follower may have a mechanical adjustment or it may have an automatic hydraulic adjustment. See figure 32-35. 3. A third type moves the rocker arm directly through a hydraulic lifter. 4. In the fourth design, some newer engines have the hydraulic adjustment in the rocker arm and are commonly called hydraulic lash adjusters known as HLA. See figure 32-36. Refer to figure 32-34. Hydraulic lifters may be built into bucket type lifters on some overhead camshaft engines. Refer to Figure 3235. The use of cam followers allows the use of hydraulic lifters with an overhead camshaft design. Refer to Figure 3236. Hydraulic lash adjusters, known as HLA, are built into the rocker arm on some OHC engines. Sometimes HLAs may not bleed down properly if the wrong viscosity, SAE rating, oil is used. Valve train lubrication. The lifters in an OHV engine are lubricated through oil passages drilled through the block. The engine oil then flows through the lifter and up through the hollow pushrod, where the oil flows to lubricate and cool the rocker arm, valve, and valve spring. Note: the Chrysler 5.7-liter Hemi engine is opposite because the oil is first sent to the rocker arm through passages in the block and head, and then down through the hollow pushrod to the lifters. In all other engine designs, the oil flows through the lifter and up to the rocker arm through the hollow pushrod. Camshaft lubrication. The camshaft in OHV engines is lubricated by splash oil thrown up by the movement of the crankshaft counterweights and connecting rods. At low engine speed, there is less splash lubrication than occurs at higher engine speeds. This is the major reason why an engine equipped with flat-bottom lifters should be operated at a fast idle of about 2,500 RPM during the first 10 minutes of engine operation. The high idle speed helps ensure that there is enough splash oil to properly lubricate and brake in a new camshaft and lifters. Refer to Figure 3237. The cause of a misfire diagnostic trouble code was discovered to be a pushrod that had worn through the rocker arm on a General Motors 3.1-liter V6 engine. Valve train problem diagnosis. Symptoms: a camshaft with a partially worn lobe is often difficult to diagnose. Sometimes a valve tick, tick, tick noise is heard if the cam lobe is worn. The ticking noise can be intermittent, which makes it harder to determine the cause. If the engine has an OHC, it is usually relatively easy to remove the cam cover and make a visual inspection of all cam lobes and the rest of the valve train. In an OHV engine, the camshaft is in the block, where easy visual inspection is not possible. However, it always pays to perform a visual inspection. See Figure 3237. Valve noise diagnosis. Valve lifters are often noisy, especially at engine startup. When the engine is off, some valves are open. The valve spring pressure forces the inner plunger to leak down, oil is forced out of the lifter. Therefore, many vehicle manufacturers consider valve ticking at 1/2 engine speed after startup to be normal, especially if the engine is quiet after 10 to 30 seconds. Be sure that the engine is equipped with the correct oil filter, and that the filter has an internal check valve. If in doubt, use an original equipment oil filter. If all of the valves are noisy, check the oil level. If low, the oil may have been aerated, air mixed with the oil, which would prevent proper operation of the hydraulic lifter. Aeration can be caused by low oil pressure, which can also cause all valves to be noisy. The oil level being too high, which can also cause noisy valve lifters. The crankshaft counterweights create foam as they rotate through the oil. This foam can travel through the oiling systems to the lifters. The foam in the lifters prevents normal operation and allows the valves to make noise. If the valves are abnormally noisy, remove the valve cover and use a stethoscope to listen or apply pressure to the rocker arms to determine which valves or valve train parts may be causing the noise. Check for all of the following items: the valve lash too loose, a worn camshaft lobe, dirty, stuck, or worn lifters, worn rocker arm, if the vehicle is so equipped, worn rocker arm shaft, see Figure 3238, worn or bent pushrods, if the vehicle is so equipped, broken or weak valve springs, and sticking or warped valves. Any of the above can cause the engine to idle roughly, misfire, or even backfire during acceleration. Figure 3238. Shaft-mounted rocker arms are held in position by an assortment of springs, spacers, and washers, which should be removed so that the entire shaft can be inspected for wear. Tech tip: the rotating pushrod test. To quickly and easily test whether the camshaft is okay, observe if the pushrods are rotating when the engine is running. This test works on any overhead valve pushrod engine that uses flat-bottom lifters. Due to the slight angle on the cam lobe and lifter offset, the lifter and pushrod should rotate whenever the engine is running. To check, simply remove the rocker arm cover and observe the pushrods when the engine is running. If one or more pushrods are not rotating, this camshaft and/or the lifter for that particular valve is worn and needs to be replaced. Case study: the noisy camshaft. The owner of an overhead cam four-cylinder engine complained of a noisy engine. After taking the vehicle to several technicians and getting high estimates to replace the camshaft and followers, the owner tried to find a less expensive solution. Finally, another technician replaced the serpentine drive belt on the front of the engine and cured the camshaft noise for a fraction of the previous estimates. Many engines have been disassembled and/or overhauled because of a noise that was later determined to be from one of the following: a loose or defective accessory drive belts, a loose torque converter to flex plate, or drive plate, bolts, or nuts, a defective mechanical fuel pump, if equipped. Summary: the complaint, vehicle owner complained about a noisy engine. The cause, a defective accessory drive belt was found to be the cause of the noise. The correction, the accessory drive belt was replaced, which eliminated the noisy engine complaint. Camshaft specifications. Duration, camshaft duration is the number of degrees of crankshaft, not camshaft, rotation for which a valve is lifted off the seat. The specification for duration can be expressed by several different methods, which must be considered when comparing one cam with another. The three most commonly used methods include: 1. Duration of valve opening at zero lash, or clearance. If a hydraulic lifter is used, the lash is zero. If a solid lifter is used, this method of expression refers to the duration of the opening of the valve after the specified clearance, lash, between the rocker arm and the valve stem tip has been closed. 2. Duration at 0.05 of an inch lifter, or tappet, lift. Because this specification method eliminates all valve lash clearances and compensates for lifter, or tappet, styles, it is the preferred method to use when comparing one camshaft with another. Another method used to specify duration of some factory camshafts is to specify crankshaft duration at 0.01 of an inch lifter lift. The important point to remember is that the technician must be sure to use equivalent specification methods when comparing or selecting camshafts. Note: fractions of a degree are commonly expressed in units called minutes. 60 minutes equal 1 degree. For example, 45 minutes equals 3 quarters of a degree, 30 minutes equals half of a degree, and 15 minutes equals 1 quarter of a degree. 3. SAE camshaft specifications. SAE's recommended practice is to measure all valve events at 0.006 of an inch, or 0.15 mm, valve lift. This method differs from the usual method used by vehicle or camshaft manufacturers. Whenever comparing valve timing events, be certain that the exact same methods are used on all camshafts being compared. Valve overlap. Another camshaft specification is the number of degrees of overlap. Valve, or camshaft, overlap is the number of degrees of crankshaft rotation during which both intake and exhaust valves are open. In other words, overlap occurs at the beginning of the intake stroke and at the end of the exhaust stroke. All camshafts provide for some overlap to improve engine performance and efficiency, especially at higher engine speeds. A lower amount of overlap results in smoother idle and low engine speed operation, but it also means that a lower amount of power is available at higher engine speeds. A greater valve overlap causes rougher engine idle, with decreased power at low speeds, but it also means that high-speed power is improved. Example 1, a camshaft with 50 degrees, or less, of overlap may be used in an engine in which low-speed torque and smooth idle qualities are desired. Engines used with overdrive automatic transmissions benefit from the low-speed torque and fuel economy benefits of a small overlap cam. Example 2, a camshaft with 100 degrees of overlap is more suitable for use with a manual transmission, with which high RPM power is desired. An engine equipped with a camshaft with over 100 degrees of overlap tends to idle roughly and exhibit poor low engine speed response and lowered fuel economy. See Figure 3239. Figure 3239 graphic representation of a typical camshaft showing the relationship between the intake and exhaust valves. The shaded area represents the overlap period of 100 degrees. Calculating valve overlap, an engine features a camshaft where the intake valve starts to open at 19 degrees before top dead center known as BTDC, and the exhaust valve is open until 22 degrees after top dead center known as ATDC. To determine overlap, total the number of degrees for which the intake valve is open BTDC at 19 degrees, and the number of degrees for which the exhaust valve is open ATDC at 22 degrees. Valve overlap equals 19 plus 22 equals 41 degrees. Lobe centers. Another camshaft specification that creates some confusion is the angle of the center lines of the intake and exhaust lobes. This separation between the center lines of the intake and exhaust lobes is called lobe center. Lobe separation. Lobe displacement angle known as LDA, or lobe spread. The lobe center's measurement is measured in degrees. See Figure 3240. Note, some engines that are equipped with dual overhead camshafts and four valves per cylinder use a different camshaft profile for each of the intake and exhaust valves. For example, one intake valve for each cylinder could have a cam profile designed for maximum low-speed torque. The other intake valve for each cylinder could be designed for higher engine speed power. This results in an engine that is able to produce a high torque over a broad engine speed range. Refer to Figure 3240. As the lobe center angle decreases, the overlap increases, with no other changes in the lobe profile lift and duration. Two camshafts with identical lift and duration can vary greatly in operation because of variation in the angle between the lobe center lines. 1. The smaller the angle between the lobe center lines, the greater the amount of overlap. For example, 108 degrees is a narrower lobe center angle. 2. The larger the angle between the lobe center lines, the less the amount of overlap. For example, 114 degrees is a wider lobe center angle. To find the degree of separation between intake and exhaust lobes of a cam, refer to formula on page 353. See Figure 3241. The lobe separation angle can be determined by transferring the intake and exhaust duration and overlap into the formula. Refer to formulas on page 353. The lobe separation angle can be calculated by taking the center of the intake lobe use, intake valve duration plus exhaust valve duration divided by 4 minus the overlap divided by 2. Refer to Figure 3241, typical cam timing diagram. Effects of lobe separation on valve operation. See chart 32.1, for what effect a change in lobe separation angle known as LSA has on engine operation. Cam timing specifications. Cam timing specifications are stated in terms of the angle of the crankshaft in relation to top dead center, or TDC, or bottom dead center, or BDC, when the valves open and close. Intake valve. The intake valves should open slightly before the piston reaches TDC and starts down on the intake stroke. This ensures that the valve is fully open when the piston travels downward on the intake stroke. The flow through a partially open valve, especially a valve ground at 45 degrees instead of 30 degrees, is greatly reduced as compared with that when the valve is in its fully open position. The intake valve closes after the piston reaches BDC because the air-fuel mixture has inertia, or the tendency of matter to remain in motion. Even after the piston stops traveling downward on the intake stroke and starts upward on the compression stroke, the inertia of the air-fuel mixture can still be used to draw an additional charge. Typical intake valve specifications are to open at 19 degrees BTDC and close at 46 degrees ABDC. Exhaust valve. The exhaust valve opens while the piston is traveling down on the power stroke, before the piston starts up on the exhaust stroke. Opening the exhaust valve before the piston starts up on the exhaust stroke ensures that the combustion pressure is released and the exhaust valve is mostly open when the piston starts up. The exhaust valve does not close until after the piston has traveled past TDC and is starting down on the intake stroke. Because of inertia of the exhaust, some of the burned gases continue to flow out the exhaust valve after the piston is past TDC. This can leave a partial vacuum in the combustion chamber to start pulling in the fresh charge. This partial vacuum is called scavenging and helps bring in a fresh air-fuel charge into the cylinders. Typical exhaust valve specifications are to open at 49 degrees before bottom dead center, BBDC, and close at 22 degrees after top dead center, a TDC. Refer to chart 32.1, changing the lobe separation angle has major effect on engine operation. Cam timing chart. During the four strokes of a four-stroke cycle gasoline engine, the crankshaft revolves 720 degrees, it makes two complete revolutions, 2 times 360 plus 720 degrees. Camshaft specifications are given in crankshaft degrees. In the example in Figure 3242, the intake valve starts to open at 39 degrees BTDC, remains open through the entire 180 degrees of the intake stroke, and does not close until 71 degrees ATDC. Refer to Figure 3242, typical high-performance camshaft specifications on a straight-line graph. Intake valve duration equals 39 plus 180 plus 71 equals 290 degrees. Exhaust valve duration equals 7 plus 180 plus 47 equals 234 degrees. Because intake and exhaust valve specifications are different, the camshaft grind is called asymmetrical. Refer to Figure 3243, a typical camshaft valve timing diagram with the same specifications as those shown in Figure 3236. Therefore, the duration of the intake valve is 39 degrees plus 180 degrees plus 71 degrees, or 290 degrees. The exhaust valve of the example camshaft opens at 78 degrees BBDC and closes at 47 degrees ATDC. When the exhaust valve specifications are added to the intake valve specifications in the diagram, the overlap period is easily observed. The overlap in the example is 39 degrees plus 47 degrees, or 86 degrees. The duration of the exhaust valve opening is 78 degrees plus 180 degrees plus 47 degrees, or 305 degrees. Because the specifications of this camshaft indicate close to and over 300 degrees of duration, this camshaft should only be used where power is more important than fuel economy. The usual method of drawing a camshaft timing diagram is in a circle illustrating two revolutions, 720 degrees, of the crankshaft. See figure 3243, for an example of a typical camshaft timing diagram for a camshaft with the same specifications as the one illustrated in figure 3236. Refer to figure 3244, a dial indicator being used to measure cam lobe height. Camshaft removal. Cam in block engines, if the engine is of an OHV design, the camshaft is usually located in the block above the crankshaft. The timing chain and gears, if the vehicle is so equipped, should be removed after the timing chain, or, gear, cover is removed. Loosen the rocker arms, or rocker arm shaft, and remove the pushrods. Then remove the valve lifters before removing the camshaft from the block. Note, be sure to keep the pushrods and rocker arms together if they are to be reused. Measuring camshafts. Total indicator runout. All camshafts should be checked for straightness by placing them on V-blocks and measuring the cam bearings for runout by using a dial indicator. The maximum total indicator runout known as TIR, also called total indicated runout, should be less than 0.002 of an inch, or 0.05 mm. Cam lobe height. Sometimes the camshaft lobe height needs to be measured to verify the exact camshaft that is installed in the engine. This can be done by attaching a dial indicator and then slowly rotating the engine while observing the indicator and comparing the measurement to factory specifications. See figure 3244. Refer to chart 32.2, a comparison showing the effects of valve timing and lift on engine performance. Change in camshaft. Refer to chart 32.3. The purpose for varying the cam timing includes providing for more engine torque and power over a wide engine speed and load range. Selecting a camshaft. Determining engine usage. For stock rebuilds, use a replacement camshaft with the same specifications as the engine had from the factory for like new performance. However, if more power is desired, then many engine builders select a different camshaft than the stock version. A common mistake of beginning engine builders is to install a camshaft with too much duration for the size of the engine. This extended duration of valve opening results in a rough idle and low manifold vacuum, which causes lack of low speed power. For example, a hydraulic cam with duration of greater than 225 degrees at 0.05 of an inch lift for a 350-inch 3 engine is usually not be suitable for street driving. Seat duration is the number of degrees of crankshaft rotation that the valve is off the seat. See chart 32.2. Check with the camshaft manufacturer for their recommendation for the best camshaft to use. Be prepared to furnish them with the following information. The engine make and size. The weight of the vehicle. The type of transmission. The final drive gear ratio and the intended use of the vehicle. Variable valve timing. Purpose and function. Conventional camshafts are permanently synchronized to the crankshaft so that they operate the valves at a specific point in each combustion cycle. In an engine, the intake valve opens slightly before the piston reaches the top of the cylinder and closes about 60 degrees after the piston reaches the bottom of the stroke on every cycle, regardless of the engine speed or load. On newer engines, the camshaft can have the capability of a variable valve timing feature that changes the camshaft specifications during different operating modes. For example, many vehicle manufacturers use three basic types of variable valve timing. 1. Exhaust camshaft variable action only on overhead camshaft engines, such as on many inline 4 and 6 cylinder engines. 2. Intake and exhaust camshaft variable action on both camshafts used in many engines. 3. Changing the relationship of the camshaft to the crankshaft, in overhead valve cam and block engines. Variable cam timing allows the valves to be operated at different points in the combustion cycle, to improve performance. See chart 32.3. Variable camshaft timing is used on most recent model engines. The general types of variable valve timing include intake valve timing only, exhaust valve timing only, or both intake and exhaust valve timing. On a system that controls the intake camshaft only, the camshaft timing is advanced at low engine speed, closing the intake valves earlier to improve low RPM torque. At high engine speeds, the camshaft is retarded by using engine oil pressure against a helical gear to rotate the camshaft. When the camshaft is retarded, the intake valve closing is delayed, improving cylinder filling at higher engine speeds. Variable cam timing can be used to control exhaust cam timing only. Engines that use this system, such as the 4.2-liter GM inline six-cylinder engines, can eliminate the exhaust gas recirculation valve because the computer can close the exhaust valve sooner than normal, trapping some exhaust gases in the combustion chamber and, therefore, eliminating the need for an EGR valve. Some engines use variable camshaft timing on both intake and exhaust cylinder cams. Refer to Figure 3245, camshaft rotation during advance and retard. Refer to Figure 3246, the camshaft is rotated in relation to the crankshaft by the PCM to provide changes in valve timing. Operation: the camshaft position actuator oil control valve known as OCV, directs oil from the oil feed in the head to the appropriate camshaft position actuator oil passages. There is one OCV for each camshaft position actuator. The OCV is sealed and mounted to the front cover. The ported end of the OCV is inserted into the cylinder head with a sliding fit. A filter screen protects each OCV oil port from any contamination in the oil supply. The camshaft position actuator is mounted to the front end of the camshaft, and the timing notch in the nose of the camshaft aligns with the dowel pin in the camshaft position actuator to ensure proper cam timing and camshaft position actuator oil hole alignment. See Figure 3245. OHV variable timing. The variable valve timing system uses an electronically controlled, hydraulic gear-driven cam phaser that can alter the relationship of the camshaft from 15 degrees retard to 25 degrees advance, 40 degrees overall, relative to the crankshaft. By using variable valve timing known as VVT, engineers were able to eliminate the EGR valve. The VVT also works in conjunction with an active intake manifold that gives the engine a broader torque curve. See Figure 3246. A valve in the intake manifold creates a longer path for intake air at low speeds, improving combustion efficiency and torque output. At higher speed, the valve opens and creates a shorter air path for maximum power production. Varying the exhaust and or the intake camshaft position allows for reduced exhaust emissions and improved performance. See Chart 32.4. Refer to Chart 32.4. Changing the exhaust cam timing mainly helps reduce exhaust emissions, whereas changing the intake cam timing mainly helps the engine produce increased power and torque. Refer to Figure 3247, spline cam phaser assembly. By varying the exhaust cam phasing, vehicle manufacturers are able to meet newer NOx reduction standards and eliminate the exhaust gas recirculation known as EGR valve. Also, by using exhaust cam phasing, the powertrain control module, or PCM, can close the exhaust valve sooner than usual, thereby trapping some exhaust gases in the combustion chamber. Manufacturers use one or two actuators that allow the camshaft piston to change by up to 50 degrees in relation to the crankshaft position. The two types of cam phasing devices commonly used are 1. The spline phaser, used on OHC engines. 2. The vane phaser, used on OHC and OHV cam and block engines. Spline phaser system. The spline phaser system is also called the valve cam phaser known as VCP, and consists of the following components. The engine control module, or ECM. The four-way pulse width modulated, or PWM, control valve. The cam phaser assembly, and the camshaft position, or CMP, sensor. See Figure 3247. Spline phaser system operation. On most engines, the PWM control valve is located on the front of the cylinder head. Oil pressure is regulated by the control valve and then directed to the ports in the cylinder head leading to the camshaft and cam phaser position. The cam phaser is located on the exhaust cams and is part of the exhaust cam sprocket. When the PCM commands an increase in oil pressure, the piston is moved inside the cam as the cam starts to push the lifter against the VAW phaser and rides along the helical splines, which compresses the coil spring. This movement causes the cam phaser gear and the camshaft to move in an opposite direction, thereby retarding the cam timing. See Figure 3248. Tech tip: check the screen on the control valve if there are problems. If a NOx emission failure at a state inspection occurs or a diagnostic trouble code is set related to the cam timing, remove the control valve and check for a clogged oil screen. A lack of regular oil changes can cause the screen to become clogged, thereby preventing proper operation. A rough idle is a common complaint because the spring may not be able to return the camshaft to the idle position after a long highway trip. See Figure 3249. Note: a unique cam within a cam is used on 2008 and newer Dodge Viper V10, OHV engines. This design allows the exhaust lobes to be moved by up to 36 degrees to improve idle quality and reduction of exhaust emissions. Vane phaser system on an overhead camshaft. Engine: the vane phaser system used on OHC engines uses a camshaft piston known as CMP sensor on each camshaft. Each camshaft has its own actuator and its own oil control valve, or OCV. Instead of using a piston along a helical spline, the vane phaser uses a rotor with four vanes, which is connected to the end of the camshaft. The rotor is located inside the stator, which is bolted to the cam sprocket. The stator and rotor are not connected. Oil pressure is controlled on both sides of the vanes of the rotor, which creates a hydraulic link between the two parts. The oil control valve varies the balance of pressure on either side of the vanes and thereby controls the position of the camshaft. A return spring is used under the reluctor of the phaser to help return it to the home or 0 degrees position. See Figure 3250. Refer to Figure 3248, a spline phaser. Refer to Figure 3249. The screens protect the solenoid valve from dirt and debris that can cause the valve to stick. This fault can set AP0017 diagnostic trouble code, crankshaft position camshaft position correlation error. Magnetically controlled vane phaser. On this type, the PCM controls a magnetically controlled vane phaser by using a 12 volts PWM signal to an electromagnet, which operates the OCV. A magnetically controlled vane phaser is used on many double overhead camshaft engines on both the intake and exhaust camshafts. The OCV directs pressurized engine oil to either advance or retard chambers of the camshaft actuator to change the camshaft position in relation to the crankshaft position. See Figure 3251. Refer to Figure 3250. A vane phaser is used to move the camshaft, using changes in oil pressure from the oil control valve. The following occurs when the pulse width is changed. 0% pulse width. The oil is directed to the advance chamber of the exhaust camshaft actuator and the retard chamber of the intake camshaft activator. 50% pulse width. The computer is holding the camshaft steady in the desired position. 100% pulse width. The oil is directed to the retard chamber of the exhaust camshaft actuator and the advance chamber of the intake camshaft actuator. Refer to Figure 3251, a magnetically controlled vane phaser. The cam phasing is continuously variable with a range from 40 degrees for the intake camshaft and 50 degrees for the exhaust camshaft. The ECM uses the following sensors to determine the best position of the camshaft for maximum power and lowest possible exhaust emissions. The engine speed, or RPM. The MAP sensor. The crankshaft position, or CKP. The camshaft position, or CMP, and the barometric pressure, or BARO. Cam in block engine cam phaser. Overhead valve engines that use a cam in block design use a magnetically controlled cam phaser to vary the camshaft in relation to the crankshaft. This type of phaser is not capable of changing the duration of valve opening or valve lift. Inside the camshaft actuator is a rotor with vanes that are attached to the camshaft. Oil pressure is supplied to the vanes, which causes the camshaft to rotate in relation to the crankshaft. The camshaft actuator solenoid valve directs the flow of oil to either the advance or retard side vanes of the actuator. See Figure 3252. The ECM sends a PWM signal to the camshaft actuator magnet. The movement of the pintle is used to direct oil flow to the actuator. The higher the duty cycle, the greater the movement in the valve position and change in camshaft timing. Note: when oil pressure drops to zero when the engine stops, a spring-loaded locking pin is used to keep the camshaft locked to prevent noise at engine start. When the engine starts, oil pressure releases the locking pin. Variable lift and cylinder deactivation systems. Variable valve lift systems. Variable camshafts include the system used by Honda and Acura, called variable valve timing and lift electronic control known as VTEC. This system uses two different camshafts for low and high RPM. When the engine is operating at idle and speeds below about 4000 RPM, the valves are opened by camshafts that are optimized by maximum torque and fuel economy. When engine speed reaches a predetermined speed, depending on the exact make and model, the computer turns on a solenoid, which opens a spool valve. When the spool valve opens, engine oil pressure pushes against pins that lock the three intake rocker arms together. With the rocker arms lashed, the valves must follow the profile of the high RPM cam lobe in the center. This process of switching from the low-speed camshaft profile to the high-speed profile takes about 100 milliseconds. See figures 3253 and 3254. Cylinder deactivation systems. Some engines are designed to operate on 4 of 8 cylinders, or 3 of 6 cylinders, during low load conditions to improve fuel economy. The powertrain control module, or PCM, monitors engine speed, coolant temperature, throttle position, and load, and determines when to deactivate cylinders. The key to this process is the use of two-stage hydraulic valve lifters. In normal operation, the inner and outer lifter sleeves are held together by a pin and operate as an assembly. When the computer determines that the cylinder can be deactivated, oil pressure is delivered to a passage, which depresses the pin and allows the outer portion of the lifter to follow the contour of the cam while the inner portion remains stationary, keeping the valve closed. The electronic operation is achieved through the use of the lifter oil manifold containing solenoids to control the oil flow, which is used to activate or deactivate the cylinders. General Motors once called this system displacement on demand, or DOD, but now calls it active fuel management. Chrysler calls this a multiple displacement system known as MDS. See figures 3255 and 3256. Refer to figure 3252, a camshaft position actuator used in a cam in block engine. Refer to figure 3253, a plastic mock-up of a Honda VTEC system that uses two different camshaft profiles, one for low-speed engine operation and the other for high-speed. Refer to figure 3254, engine oil pressure is used to switch cam lobes on a VTEC system. Refer to figure 3255, oil pressure applied to the locking pin causes the inside of the lifter to freely move inside the outer shell of the lifter, thereby keeping the valve closed. Refer to figure 3256, active fuel management includes many different components and changes to the oiling system, which makes routine oil changes even more important on engines equipped with this system. Review questions. Question 1. How is the camshaft driven by the crankshaft? Question 2. What drives the high-pressure fuel pump on a GDI engine? Question 3. How is a composite camshaft constructed? Question 4. What is meant by an interference engine? Question 5. How does variable valve timing help improve engine operation and reduce emissions? Chapter Quiz. Question 1. The camshaft makes blank for every revolution of the crankshaft. A. 1/4 revolution. B. 1/2 revolution. C. 1 revolution. D. 2 revolutions. Question 2. ADOHC V6 has how many camshafts? A. 4. B. 2. C. 3. D. 1. Question 3. Which timing chain type is also called a silent chain? A. Roller. B. Morse. C. Flat link. D. Both B and C. Question 4. Many technicians always use new push rods because A. They are less expensive to buy than clean. B. All of the dirt cannot be cleaned out from the hollow center. C. They wear at both ends. D. They shrink in length if removed from an engine. Question 5. Hydraulic valve lifters can make a ticking noise when the engine is running if A. The valve lash is too close. B. The valve lash is too loose. C. The lobe center line is over 110 degrees. D. Both A and C. Question 6. Hydraulic lifters or hydraulic lash adjusters may not bleed down properly and cause an engine to miss if A. The engine oil is 1 quart low. B. The wrong API rated engine oil is used. C. The wrong SAE rated engine oil is used. D. Both A and B. Question 7. If lift and duration remain constant and the lobe center angle decreases, then A. The valve overlap decreases. B. The effective lift increases. C. The effective duration increases. D. The valve overlap increases. Question 8. The intake valve opens at 39 degrees BTDC and closes at 71 degrees ABDC. The exhaust valve opens at 78 degrees BBDC and closes at 47 degrees ATDC. Which answer is correct? A. Intake valve duration is 110 degrees. B. Exhaust valve duration is 125 degrees. C. Overlap is 86 degrees. D. Both A and B. Question 9. The maximum total indicator runout, or TIR, of a camshaft should be less than A. 0.002 of an inch. B. 0.006 of an inch. C. 0.004 of an inch. D. 0.008 of an inch. Question 10. Two technicians are discussing variable valve timing. Technician A says that changing the exhaust valve timing helps reduce exhaust emissions. Technician B says that changing the intake valve timing helps increase low speed torque. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. End of chapter 32.